In this respect, I think it's quite similar to some of the concerns that are expressed in Protestant Christianity, where the focus of energy and also the focus, you'd have to say, of anxiety in Christianity lies on the intersection of grace and faith. Why these two concepts, the original vow and faith? Faith, I think we can understand. It's important in the Christian world that many of us are familiar with. Why the original vow? What is it about that concept that's really significant? I've actually done some thinking and some writing about this concept because I think it helps unlock for us some of the deep devotional logic of the Mahayana itself, going back not just to the Kamakura period in Japan, but also to the origins of the Mahayana tradition in India. You remember when we talked about the Buddha and the Buddha's nirvana, the basic idea of the Buddha is of a person who achieves a certain state of perfection and awareness and then escapes the cycle of transmigration altogether. And when he achieves nirvana, his life in the world of death and rebirth is simply over. And he leaves various remnants behind that we can relate to. They're relics that we can worship that are express the Buddha's power, and there also is his teaching that we can use ourselves to achieve nirvana as he did. But he as a person is really no longer present for us to relate to. And this old issue, this old image of what a Buddha is, continued in a certain way in the Mahayana. It was transformed, but it continued. And the question rose again in a distinctively Mahayana way, what is left when the Buddha is gone? The Mahayana tradition answered this question by looking back into the career of the Bodhisattva that led up to that Buddhahood. And they looked at the promises and the vows that had been made by that Bodhisattva before the Bodhisattva achieved enlightenment as a Buddha. They began to work with the idea that that Bodhisattva, way back in some distant past, Japanese tradition, they actually think of this as an event that was beyond time. That Bodhisattva made a promise, made a vow, that if certain things happened, if you chanted the name of that Buddha with faith, that eventually you would be born in the Pure Land and would sit in the presence of that Buddha. So the original vow functions devotionally in this tradition like grace in the Christian tradition. It's a kind of power that has been implanted in the universe that operates even when the Bodhisattva who set that power in motion is gone. And it's possible for us to plug into that power simply by abandoning our self-effort, our own self-efforts, and opening ourselves up to it and receiving it as the grace of Amida Buddha. You can see how close this comes to some of the devotional issues that appear in Christianity. Now, you could ask if that is the image of Amida's grace or of Amida's compassion, what kind of response is it meant to elicit from the human devotee? What response should come from us? Obviously, a sense of humility, an abandoning of any sense of pride, the feeling that we ourselves can grasp Amida's salvation in some way by our own efforts. It also is important in this tradition to be convinced that it's for real. You know, you got to have a sense of conviction, because if you don't have a sense of conviction, it really isn't going to work for you. So there's an awful lot said in Shinran's writings and in the writings of his followers about how it's important to trust Amida with your whole heart, as it were, with all of your being in order to respond to the grace of Amida Buddha. But the interesting thing about the concept of faith in this tradition that most sort of intrigues me coming at it from a Christian point of view is faith understood as the mind of Amida moving in your heart. The word that's used in the old Indian texts to express the movement of faith toward Amida Buddha is the prasanna citta, the clear or convinced mind, the citta, the mind or the heart.